Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's November 12, 2013, and this is episode 395. Last week, I took delivery of a shiny new 27-inch iMac, and having just about got it set up how I want it now, I wanted to relay my thinking behind the purchase and a few important things that I've learned from a photographer's perspective, especially with regards to the quality of the screen, which has, in short, blown me away. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MBP11. So, first a little background. I was a Windows user since 1994, but I've been also using Macs since college here in Japan from 1995, and bought a Mac Mini back in 2006, my first Mac, to enable me to create this podcast in the enhanced podcast format. I actually replaced that Mac Mini as the old one became slow, and then in January 2011, almost 3 years ago now, having become somewhat annoyed with Windows for a number of reasons, such as no native 16-bit printing and the lack of ability to put USB hard drives to sleep, among other things. So I decided to jump ship completely to the Mac platform. I bought a MacBook Pro and told myself I'd give it a year, and if I was still happy with the decision, I would buy a Mac Pro to live permanently in my office studio. At the time, I was thinking of the Mac Pro, that was a tower-style Mac that looked similar to a lot of Windows-based tower-style desktop computers. It didn't take me a year to decide whether or not Mac was for me, though. I knew before very long at all that I was never going back to Windows. It's not that I've got anything against Windows, really. I'm just happier with the Mac hardware and the Mac OS than I've ever really felt about Windows. The only thing that I missed was the accounting module that tells me exactly how much each print that I make with my IPF 6350 large format printer costs. And I also cannot access my business account internet banking with any other browser than Internet Explorer. To overcome both of these problems, I use Parallels, and I start it solely for these two reasons and for nothing else. So, why didn't I buy a Mac Pro after the first year? Well, basically, for much of what I do, the MacBook Pro and now the MacBook Pro Retina do pretty much everything I want. I have a tendency to max out new computers that I buy, especially now that MacBook Pros can't be upgraded. So my powerful Retina laptop has been great, and even encodes video pretty fast. But there was one problem with my setup that has needed a solution since I switched to Mac. I'd been using my MacBook Pro with my external ASRock display when in my office, but the laptop screen was always far away, and I really couldn't see it very well, so I had to move Windows to the ASRock screen to pretty much do everything. And after switching from the 17-inch MacBook Pro to the smaller 15-inch Retina screen, this started to become a real problem. By this point, I was using my first MacBook Pro as a server in my office, backing up to Backblaze, etc., but continued to plug my ASRock into my main Retina computer to do work in the office. And there are times when I'd need to leave it all connected to do jobs like copying my entire image library from one drive to another or rebuilding all of my Lightroom previews. So this, coupled with the not ideal display situation, meant that I needed to make some changes. As with camera equipment, I don't buy anything new unless the upgrade or new addition to my kit enables me to solve a problem. I now had two main problems to overcome with my office computer situation. I needed a second large screen and I needed a second powerful machine for the jobs that caused me to have to leave my MacBook Pro in the studio overnight or for multiple days sometime. With my office slash studio being on the third floor of our apartment, I generally start working from, you know, looking at email, etc., while sitting at the dining table after breakfast. And I come up to the office at around 9 a.m. Then, after dinner in the evening at 7 p.m., unless I need to come back upstairs for a meeting or to finish something off, I stay downstairs and work from the sofa. That keeps me close to my wife, but I can still get stuff done, which means having to leave my computer in the office was a problem. So I have been weighing up my options slowly over the last few years. Then more seriously this last year since the MacBook Pro Retina with the smaller screen. And here is what I was comparing. First, I had to decide which Mac desktop I would buy. The Mac Pro hadn't been given a major upgrade for years, so it was obviously ready. I waited for this for a while, but nothing surfaced until a few months ago when Apple announced the upgraded Mac Pro that we'll see start to hit the stores in a few weeks' time. This is a monster of a machine, a black cylinder basically that can be packed with a huge amount of computing power, as well as 4K monitor support. As I said, I tend to try to max out the specs when I buy a new computer, but maxing out the new Mac Pro would probably make too big a dent in my bank balance. And frankly, I'm already close to being happy with the amount of computing power I have, so I could not warrant the expense of a mid to high-end spec Mac Pro when they become available. The other option, of course, was buying a second external display and plugging that into my MacBook Pro along with the current Acer monitor. That, of course, only solves half the problem, though, in that I'd still not have a reasonably powerful computer in the office, plus a 27-inch Acer CX model would cost me around $1,200 or $1,800 if I went for the CG model with the hardware calibration, but I probably wouldn't do that as I don't think it's worth the extra cost. Now, I seriously considered this option. I love Acer displays and have been very happy with my current 24-inch display for more than 5 years now, but that's a lot of money to spend when you consider it only solves half of the problem. So I kept thinking that the iMac would be a great compromise. It has a beautiful screen and a pretty powerful computer built right in. The problem for me was for the longest time was the glossy screen. My first MacBook Pro had the matte screen and I liked it a lot. The Retina screen on my current MacBook Pro is glossy, and although it's a beautiful screen, you have to be careful where you sit or the reflection can be really quite distracting. In my office, I sit to the right of the window, so there are no light sources behind me, but I do have a plastic-covered first surface mirror leaning against the wall behind me, and that's very reflective, especially when the sun comes out. So the glossy iMac screens would have been a problem until now. When the new iMac was announced, I was really happy to see Apple singing the praises of a new 75% reduced reflection screen. I didn't have time to go in to town and actually take a look at one, but from what I read online, this looked to be the real deal. After a little more serious consideration, I decided to go for the 27-inch iMac. I almost maxed out the specs, so it has a 3.5 GHz quad-core Intel i7 CPU that boosts to 3.9 GHz and 32 GB of RAM. I didn't go for the SSD drive because $1,000 for a 1 gigabyte drive just didn't seem worth it, especially when you consider the other option of a 3 terabyte Fusion drive for an extra $350 over the base price. I didn't know that the size of the SSD component in the Fusion drive when I ordered this, but a closer look through the system information app shows me that it contains a 128 gigabyte SSD drive and a 32 terabyte hard drive. Data that you use a lot is automatically stored to the SSD drive to speed up the entire system, and the hard drive is used for slower storage. I also maxed out the video card, going for the NVIDIA GeForce GTX 780M with 4 gigabytes of GDDR5 memory, which costs an extra $150. Remember that some graphics-related applications like Photoshop and Premiere Pro now make good use of the graphics processor to accelerate processing, so having a lot of video RAM is no longer just to make games run faster and smoother. Note too, while we're at it, that I installed the NVIDIA CUDA, C-U-D-A driver to give Premiere Pro access to the full power of the graphics processor. When you buy an Apple computer here in Japan, if you customize it, it seems they're assembled in Shanghai and shipped across. I ordered my new iMac on October 31st, a Thursday, and it arrived exactly a week later on November 7th. I decided not to migrate my data from the MacBook Pro because there are a few things broken that I didn't want to chance being copied over to the new iMac. There was only one negative experience as I set up my new iMac, and that was that for the first few days, I noticed a lot of mini freezes. The mouse would lock up, and sometimes I actually had to do a force reboot to get the system working again. After a bit of trial and error, I've come to the conclusion that this was probably due to my old Drobo initially being connected via FireWire going through to the iMac via a Belkin Thunderbolt hub, which has a FireWire port. I switched the Drobo over to USB and I haven't had any more problems over the last few days, so I think that this was the cause. My Drobo 5D, of course, is still connected via Thunderbolt, going directly into the back of the Mac, and I have my external ASO monitor connected via the extra Thunderbolt port on the Belkin hub. At this point, I'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MVP11. One of the great advantages of all of the screen real estate that a 27-inch monitor gives you, of course, is that when you're editing a website, you can lay out your screens and work with much more freedom. Squarespace makes it incredibly easy to edit your and update your website, but with this much screen space, you can have your browser window on one side and a folder with your new images that you're going to upload on the other side of the screen, for example. Then with Squarespace's intuitive drag and drop UI, you just need to drag your images across and add them to a new gallery or an existing gallery. They've got many templates that have beautiful full bleed image display, which is perfect for photographers and designers to showcase their work. With hundreds of customizable settings, including fonts, colors, and sizes, every Squarespace website can be made to look unique with just a few clicks. Squarespace gallery blocks can be added anywhere on your website and offer hundreds of presentation variations, including slideshows, sliders, grid layouts, and more. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new design, and even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with and all the style options that you need to create a unique website for you or your business. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It starts at just $7 a month and includes a free domain if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look great on every device every time. Squarespace is commerce ready to provide a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution so you can set up shop and sell things quickly. You can start a trial with no credit card and start building your website right away. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code MBP11 to get a 10% discount and to show your support for the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Okay, so let's also touch on the quality of the Azo display compared to the new iMac screen. I've been a huge Azo fan since my first 17-inch Azo screen that I bought some 12 years ago. I tell you, I almost cried when I first saw my photos on an Azo screen. The quality was that good. Azo will have, of course, continued to improve their screens, and my 24-inch widescreen Azo display, although now some 5 years old, or maybe a little bit more, is still very nice, but it's getting a little bit long in the tooth. I say this kind of out of loyalty to Azo, though, because the 27-inch screen on the new iMac actually beats the Azo. I honestly didn't expect this, and I'd love to compare the iMac's screen to a new Azo, and I'd also like to compare the last generation of iMac screens to my Azo, my old one. But with what I currently have available to me, the iMac screen wins. It's going to be difficult to appreciate the subtle differences in this image, but here in the Enhanced Podcast, I've embedded a photograph of the iMac screen on the left and the Azo screen on the right. Remember, if you are listening on your iPhone or an iPad or in iTunes, you can see the images. And if you aren't listening to any of those devices or iTunes, go to mbp.ac/395. And you'll be able to click on the images in the blog post and view them large and hopefully be able to appreciate the difference here. But both screens have been calibrated with the X-Rite i1 Pro 2, and you can perhaps make out in this photo of on the two desktops, I have a photograph from Iceland recently, and the iMac has slightly more vivid colours and is a little bit more punchy. Now, punchy isn't always a good thing, especially if that punchiness is not there in your original image. Straight out of the box, the iMac was actually a little over the top for my liking, and calibration brought it down and under control. The colours are now very similar to the Azo, but the main thing that impressed me was the iMac screen's ability to display rich texture and detail. Think of the punchiness out of the box as the difference between a consumer print and a fine art print. Most printers and printing services aimed at the consumer do all sorts of nasty automated enhancements to images that they print, as they print them, so that the average happy snapper gets images back that make them go wow. Us photographers, on the other hand, either add the wow when we shoot or in post-processing, so we don't need any arbitrary enhancements during the print process. It's the same thing with most computer displays out of the box, and this is one of the main reasons we need to calibrate them. Back to the Azo comparison, though. My first MacBook Pro screen always seemed nice, but it definitely paled next to the Azo. I could see much more detail and texture in my photos on the Azo screen, so I'd kind of come to think of the Apple displays as being inferior. The Retina screen on my current MacBook Pro changed that, of course. The Retina screen is incredible and shows much more texture and better gradations. And although I wasn't expecting the iMac to display this much detail and beat the Azo, it does. In this next photo, I brought up a snow monkey shot from 2012 because my old MacBook Pro never really showed the fine gradations in the snow in the background of this shot. But as you can see here, the Retina and iMac displays both show the shot very similarly. If you open up your browser window and click on the image to view it as large as possible, you will probably also notice that the Azo display has lighter shadow areas. This is great for seeing detail in images that might otherwise be a little on the dark side, but they don't print. When I print, the shadows will plug up a little bit more than the Azo was actually able to show me. So what we're seeing here on the Retina and the iMac displays is actually a little bit closer to what I would see when I print. So I think the days of me using my Azo display as my final print soft-proofing screen may be coming to an end. Don't worry about the difference in the color temperature between these example images, by the way. I've shot these images at various times while setting up the iMac. So, you know, sometimes there was sun shining into my studio and other times it was overcast. So the wall behind my displays varies quite a lot, but they're all correctly white balanced. This photo also, of course, gives you an idea of the difference in the screen real estate that I now have. Basically, the Retina display and my Azo was my old configuration, with the Retina a little bit further back on my desk. I would do most of my work on the Azo, so I was always sitting at an angle, which I didn't like. But now I can sit straight on, and the iMac display is so large that I can have multiple application windows open at one time and not even have to switch between them. I'm currently writing my third Craft and Vision ebook, and I can't wait to start writing again as soon as I've released this week's podcast. So, as photographers, one of the major jobs we need to do on our computers is processing large batches of images. As software gets more advanced and more resource intensive, we start to notice it slowing down, and this is one of the main reasons we end up having to upgrade our computers every 3 or 4 years. But most of us, at some point, have had to run our workhorse applications like Lightroom on slow machines, and this can be incredibly frustrating. Earlier, I said that I didn't really need the power of the Mac Pro, especially when I considered that I was already happy with my MacBook Pro for stuff, most of the stuff that I do. Still though, I didn't want to buy something new that I will have to keep for probably 4 years, only to find that it was a little bit sluggish. I didn't expect it to be, but I was blown away by the speed at which I can work through large batches of images in Lightroom. When I moved my Lightroom catalog to the iMac, I deliberately didn't copy my previews folder over, as I wanted to create this again on the iMac. But I also wanted to do some speed tests, and not having any previews made that easier. This isn't a scientific test, but here are my findings. When I had already had Lightroom create standard previews for the images in a folder, I can navigate through images full screen in the library module without the loading message displaying at the bottom of the screen for the majority of the images. For a few, the loading message displays for about half a second. The image is either there in full resolution from the start, or the quality snaps in after that half a second. If I'm in the develop module, which always creates a new preview unless you've just created one, the loading message displays for a fraction of a second longer, but still under a second. That in itself is very impressive, but what's even more impressive is that when I view images in a folder that I have not yet created any previews for, literally the grey thumbnails, where there's no image at all, it still only takes a fraction of a second longer. In the library module, we're probably talking 1 second max, and in the develop module, we're talking maybe a fraction over a second. And even for 120 megabyte TIFF files, it doesn't go over 1.5 seconds. We're talking basically stress-free image editing here. And if you're wondering, yes, I already have all the other software that I need installed, so my machine is no longer a fresh install. My MacBook Pro Retina is fast, and that is running on an SSD. But it still takes about 3 seconds for the images to res in the library module. It's actually faster on the MacBook Pro Retina on mine in the develop module. For some reason, it takes just over a second, so still no complaints. But the iMac just doesn't make you feel as though there was any wait at all. Another thing that I really like but wasn't quite expecting for some reason is how incredibly comfortable Lightroom feels on the not only large but wide screen, the wide aspect screen, with a 27-inch display sitting on a desk. The chances are you're sitting pretty close to it. So although images look spectacular full screen, you don't feel as though you're missing much by having some of the Lightroom menus showing, for example. I'm always quick to hit Shift and the Tab key to get rid of all of my menus on a smaller screen, but on the iMac screen, as you can see in this screenshot, it's really not a pain to have some of the menus showing. Because the screen is a 16:9 widescreen aspect ratio, with the two side menus and the top menu in Lightroom showing, the image fits perfectly into the space left over. In fact, with the 27-inch monitor being this high quality and images in this view being roughly the same physical size as an image displayed full screen on my Azure 24-inch display, I'm quickly finding that when I'm going through images in Lightroom, I don't really even need the second display. So it's becoming more useful when doing other tasks like having multiple web browsers open, or as well as Excel and email, etc. And on the subject of email, there was always one problem that I wanted to avoid and was partially the reason for me sticking with just one main computer for a while. And that was the syncing of data between the two computers, especially email, as I'm using that on both computers, switching at least twice a day. This is not a problem if you use IMAP for all of your email, but I have a lot of locally archived email as well, so I need to copy this between computers to stay in sync. You might recall that I use an application called ChronoSync to synchronize my images with my external hard disks. So I was happy to see an article from the people at Econ Technologies, the makers of ChronoSync, when I searched for ways to synchronize email between two Macs. I won't go into details here, although I will link to the article in the show notes, but basically you have to create a few synchronization jobs and then a container to run all of these jobs in one click, and then launch that container to sync your email every time you switch computers. This may seem like a bit of a pain, but I've been doing this for a few days now, and I'm pretty happy with this method, at least until I find a totally automated method. Basically, all I have to do is run the synchronization job after breakfast, before I come upstairs, and then run it again when I go back downstairs in the evening. It takes about 1.5 minutes to run, and that's to sync the difference between a bunch of mailboxes that total 17 gigabytes. I know I should clear out my email boxes. Another thing that I really like about the new iMac is that it wakes up from sleep mode in just a few seconds. It goes to sleep when the monitor goes off and I have my system set up to turn off the display when I move the mouse to the bottom right-hand corner using the hot corners feature or after 10 minutes of inactivity. Then I just have to come back. When I come back to the computer, I tap the space bar on my keyboard and it wakes up and displays the log on screen in just a few seconds. It also wakes up over the network just as quickly, so I can do those email syncs without having to come up to the studio and physically wake up the iMac. My two connected Drobos and Time Machine backup hard drive go to sleep with the computer too, but then also wake up very quickly, so as long as I don't power the computer down totally, I can access my images on the Drobo over the network from anywhere in the house. Note too that while I'm doing a Backblaze backup of all of my images from a trip, for example, that can take a few days, I just select not to put the computer to sleep with the display in the system preferences. And on that note, I switched my Backblaze backup from my old MacBook Pro to the iMac by selecting to transfer the backup state from the Backblaze menu. It took just under 2 days for Backblaze to run through the 5.2 terabytes of data that I have backed up and confirm that they were the same files from my old system, and then back up the new stuff from the iMac as well. Now that I'm fully backed up, I'm allowing my iMac to sleep when I'm not using it. The last thing that I wanted to note is that despite the iMac containing a very powerful computer, it has generally been very quiet so far. The fan has so far only kicked in once when the mouse had frozen and something was obviously putting a lot of load on the CPU. But when it did kick in, it was quite loud. So I'm hoping this doesn't happen a lot. But so far, even when flicking through image after image in Lightroom, the fan stays off and you can't hear any noise from the iMac at all. In fact, it's really hard to believe that there's even a computer inside there at all. In fact, before we finish, I should also touch on expandability. I mentioned earlier that I have a bunch of stuff connected via USB 3 ports and Thunderbolt. Although it's difficult to actually change out parts yourself with an iMac, this is really the reason I max these computers out when I buy them. That way I can get the maximum life out of them. Pretty much everything else that I need is already connected via USB and Thunderbolt, and these offer virtually limitless expandability. I know that the new Mac Pro will have Thunderbolt 2 instead of plain old Thunderbolt, but I'm happy enough with what I have here. It's going to take a few years for companies to really maximize the benefits of Thunderbolt 2, and I don't mind hankering after the next best thing for a few more years after that, while I get my 4 years out of this iMac. If I can get 4 years out of a desktop-style computer, I'm happy, and so is my tax accountant. All in all, I can say that without a doubt, it's a big thumbs up all around for the 27-inch iMac from Apple. I knew that I was going to love this computer, but I didn't know I was going to love it this much. The new low reflectivity screen has certainly been worth waiting for, and all the power under the hood, or more to the point, hidden conspicuously behind the incredibly beautiful display, makes it the perfect computer for someone that needs power, but not necessarily a Ferrari. So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter and Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.